Well, it's a privilege to be here. I'll tell you a story or two about former visits to Lurgan, but I'll start off by saying it's a privilege to be here tonight. Could anybody tell me the year that the congregation here was constituted? 51 years ago. Well, then it's one of the prison churches. And by that I mean it was formed out of the controversy that followed the imprisonment, not of me, but of Dr. Paisley, the Reverend John Wiley, and me. I didn't figure very much in it. I was only a student at the time. I often wonder how it was I got caught up in it. But anyway, they say if you keep bad company, you end up in trouble. Well, that possibly is what happened to me. But before I do anything, I'd like just to read some verses. First of all, it's in the Psalms. I want to just set in context what it is we are anxious to do here tonight, Psalm 44. Psalm 44. While you're looking that up, my son, with whom I just have, along with my wife, spent a little time together in Canada. He has been out there as a Free Presbyterian minister for some 21 years. He was an assistant here in Lurgan for a while. And he said to me, anybody that knows me, please say hello to them. And as I look at you, you weren't even born when he was here, the most of you anyway. I don't know if any of you remember him. But I've done my duty. I've passed on his greetings to any of you who can remember him. He has happy memories of the days he spent in Lurgan. Now let's look at verse 1 of Psalm 44. We have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us what work thou didst in their days in the times of old. How thou didst drive out the heathen with thy hand and plantest them, and how thou didst afflict the people and cast them out. For they got not the land in possession by their own sword, neither did their own arm save them, but thy right hand and thine arm and the light of thy countenance, because thou hadst a favour unto them. Now notice that it's a father's duty to tell the next generation of what God has done. And notice how these fathers did not in any way say, we were queer fellows. Let me tell you what we did. No, that wasn't the spur. It's all about what God did. It's all about what God did. History written by men, it's all about what they did. But history recalled by the Christian is always what God has done. What God has done. And I want to tell you tonight something of the things that God did. Some time ago, it's a number of years, quite a number of years ago, in the Christian school in Kilskerry, they must have been doing the history of the Free Presbyterian Church. And one day after school, I had a little granddaughter come up to me with tears in her eyes. Granda, you in jail? And I had to try and explain to her. Because although jail and all what happened back in 1966 would have got mentioned in the Kilskerry Church over the years I was minister there, I think it right for me to say I never tried to emphasize the personalities involved, because it was what God did was important. And it was nice, therefore, for that little granddaughter to be unaware that her granda had been in jail in 66, and it came somewhat as a traumatic surprise to her to discover she was linked with a former convicted criminal. But she got over it when we explained the circumstances. Look at the book of Jeremiah, and I want to show you a verse there, please. Jeremiah, and it's the chapter 15, I think. No, it's not. It's the chapter 11. I must tell you a story. When we came out of jail in 1966, there was a great rally organized on the first Lord's Day we got out. And there was much difficulty. The first place that had been assigned as the location, the police and the authorities did everything they could to hinder it, and they put such pressure on the man who owned the land. Well, actually, he was the man who rented the land. There was a farm he rented. And the man who owned the land come to him and said, "You didn't rent this land to hold Protestant rallies on, and that's contrary to the terms of the rental, so you can't use it." That's so we had to cancel that and find another place. We found a field way up on the Dundonald Hills, and the buses that were bringing the people from various places, the police stopped them miles from the field. Said, "No, can't go any further." So all the people had to walk from there up quite a steep road. And it's reckoned there was 25,000 people turned up at this Welcome Home rally, and I was speaking first. And you know, I had come on a text, brought to my soul by the Lord, I do believe. Maybe we'll turn to it before I mention the other verse I was going to show you in Jeremiah. It's in chapter 37 of Jeremiah, and in verse 17 we read, "Then Zedekiah the king sent and took him out," that is, out of the prison. "And the king asked him secretly in his house and said, 'Is there any word from the Lord?' And Jeremiah says, 'There is. For,' said he, 'thou shalt be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon.'" It was for saying that he was put into jail. So now he's out of jail and the king says, "Any word from the Lord?" "Yes, there is. It's the same word that you put me into jail for." So it highlights the faithfulness of the prophet. And this is the text the Lord laid on my heart. And I had just jotted down in the margin of my Bible probably about 3 points. That's usually what I always had. And I was put on first, as I say. It was a blustery day. The wind was blowing and there was an occasional shower of rain. And we were in the open air. And so I started on this text and I made a few comments and the wind blew the pages over. And I looked down and, oh, not there. And do you know, young folk, I don't know how long I preached for. I mean, it wouldn't be too long. I never found the text again. Never found the text again. Couldn't find it. Couldn't find the headings. Couldn't even read the text again. I had to rely on memory. And as I preached, I was turning over frantically. And as I was doing that, the Lord said to me, "You just have to trust me and not rely on whatever preparation you think you've made. You're always learning, you know. The Lord's ever teaching you." Sometimes the lessons are very severe. There I was in front of all those people and the Lord was teaching me a lesson. No, they didn't know. Boy, did I know. And I never forgot what the Lord taught me that day. And I was thinking of it, you see, as I was trying to turn up that verse, for I couldn't remember where was the verse I was supposed to be directing them to. And it brought me back some 52 years ago to that mountainside up in Dundonald. Now, Jeremiah 11, the verse 7. Jeremiah 11, we're looking at the verse 7. "For I earnestly protested unto your fathers in the day that I brought them up out of the land of Egypt, even unto this day, rising early and protesting, saying, Obey my voice." Those are the words of God. And I want you to notice the use of the word protest there. God says, "I earnestly protest." And I point that out to you because I want to emphasize something, that there's a danger we in the Free Presbyterian Church might forget. The subject of this little talk this evening is 1966 imprisonment of three ministers. The cause, the circumstances, the consequences. I have to thank you for the invitation. Do you know this is the first time I've been asked to speak on this subject? since 1966 or 67. When we come out of prison, night after night after night after night after night for months on end, Dr. Paisley, Reverend John Wiley, and myself were going around the country. We came to Lurgan, big rally in Lurgan, around the whole country, speaking on the imprisonment and significance of it. We recently celebrated the 50th anniversary, but there wasn't too much mention of it. Not too much mention. Now, I'm saddened by that. Not because I wanted, as it were, to step into the limelight again. No. I'm somewhat saddened because what God did in 1966 should never be forgotten. You're here tonight because of what God did then. Likely, your father and mother are Christians, if they are Christians, because of what happened in 1966. Because across the country, God moved and worked and used the event of the imprisonment to stir up people and bring home to them issues that were taking place. And people, thousands of people, became interested in the gospel who before had never been interested at all. And I don't think we should ever forget what God did. I don't think we should ever forget what God did. Now, I want to say this. The Free Presbyterian Church was called into existence by the Lord to protest. That's why he called us. That's back in 1951. That's when the Free Presbyterian Church began, 1951. Now, the fact that we were called to protest, some Free Presbyterians may have forgotten that. And listen, it's a serious matter when we forget what it is God has set us out to do, what he intends for us to do. If we forget that, then we offend God. And we lose out with God. We lose out with God. In 1951, there were other evangelical denominations preaching the gospel, holding missions, evangelizing, being faithful to the evangelical message of the Bible. No doubt about that. But God didn't raise us up to be just another evangelical denomination. He had evangelical denominations in existence back then. But I think, and I'll try not to be critical of those denominations, I think it's right to say, and fair to say, that they were not protesters. They preached the gospel, but they were not vociferous in their denunciations of the wickedness that was emerging in the country. They weren't tackling what the devil was doing theologically, denominationally. Oh, they preached against drunkenness, they preached against immorality, they preached against all the vices that were there, but they weren't taking on what the enemy was doing in the denominations. And that's where God raised up the Free Presbyterian Church to fill that gap. In 1948, this is a long time ago, there was the formation of an organization known as the World Council of Churches. And it really was comprised of denominations across the whole world who had in common a desire to get away from the Bible, to get rid of, in their churches, in their denominations, the old-fashioned Bible doctrines. In fact, it was said at their opening meeting that what they wanted to do was to reverse what had begun under Luther at the Reformation. They wanted to stop the train and throw it into reverse and start going back in the direction from which, under God, Luther and the Reformers have been led to travel. Now, Dr. Ian Paisley, he was only just Reverend Ian Paisley back then, had been ordained as a young man in 1946 in Ravenhill Evangelical Church. He had been brought up under his father's ministry. And his father, back in the 30s, had left the Baptist denomination because of its weakness on certain doctrinal and moral issues. So, young Ian Paisley had been brought up in a separatist church, and he had heard his father deal with the issues, and the growing apostasy and ecumenism and all the terms that perhaps you know something about from your preachers here in this church. Well, he grew up with that. And when he was ordained, he showed great talents as an evangelist. And in 1951, well, it had been 1950, he was approached by the elders of Nassara Presbyterian Church, which is in Crossgar. And he was invited to conduct a gospel mission in their church hall. He had been conducting missions in various Presbyterian church halls where hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people were gathering, and sometimes the church hall became too small and they had to use the main church building and so on, and many hundreds were being saved. And the elders in the Crossgar church, they were anxious to have him come and preach amongst them. They were concerned about those who attended that church, many of whom were not saved. And so they wanted this young man to come. But the presbytery that governed the Presbyterian churches in that area, the Presbytery of Down, they met, and because there were many enemies of the gospel within that presbytery, they made a decision that they could not give that church hall to Ian Paisley. And as a result of that, the elders in Nassara withdrew. They seceded. They left. And they said, we'll have the mission, though we can't use the church hall, we'll use the little mission hall in Crossgar. And not only did they do that, but they said, we're going to form a new church, a separatist congregation here. And in conversation with Dr. Paisley, it was decided, right, we'll call the new denomination the Free Presbyterian Church of Ulster. And Crossgar became the first congregation, and Dr. Paisley's church on the Ravenhill Road, which had been called Ravenhill Evangelical Church, became Ravenhill Free Presbyterian Church, and the second congregation of the new denomination. And it's important for us to bear in mind how it is we began. You'd have a long face on you if, when birthday came round, nobody ever remembered it. And not merely remembered it, but sent you cards and presents and made a whole fuss and whatnot. You'd have a long face on you if that didn't happen. Well, please remember the birth date of our denomination, for it was God brought it into existence. And it was born in protest. And it was born to protest. That was the purpose, that God brought it into existence, and I want to emphasize that tonight. Let me tell you that protesting against error and sin is the work of God. That's the work of God. That's why I read that verse in Jeremiah chapter 11, the verse 7. For I, this is God, for I earnestly protested unto your fathers in the day that I brought them up out of the land of Egypt, even unto this day, rising early and protesting, saying, obey my voice. And of course, God's means of protesting was raising up preachers and sending them out to protest. So it's an essential part of God's purpose amongst men that there ever be a voice of protest against what it is men are doing. You'll notice the earnestness of God here. You'll notice the long-term witness that he maintained. From I brought you up out of Egypt. That's when they became a nation. From the birth of the nation, God had been protesting. And he had been protesting ever since that day. There's always something to protest against. Man is such a silly, foolish, wandering creature, like the sheep. And you know how the Bible compares God's people unto sheep again and again and again. And one of the chief features of sheep is their tendency to wander. And we're the same. And because of that wandering, God has to raise up men to protest against us and tell us you're going wrong and it's time you turn back. It's time you turn back. to bear such a witness is the duty of the people of God to the very end of this age. It's not just something that God exercised way back then, in the days of the Exodus and the days that followed, right up to the days of Jeremiah, but it's something that today God would have us maintain. And if you read the New Testament, you will find there evidence of the protest that God would have us maintain. Look at 1 Timothy, the chapter 3. 1 Timothy chapter 3. And I can remember, young people, and I probably wasn't more than a month or two senior, sitting in the gallery of the old Ravenhill Church, listening to Dr. Paisley preach. And I would say that at that time, he was at his peak. He was at his peak. I met my future wife at that time, and we often now look back and talk about those days, and we can remember his preaching. We can remember what he said. And I remember him one night. He was under fire. He was always under fire. Articles in the newspaper and speakers, MPs, ecumenical ministers, and even evangelicals were denouncing Ian Paisley. That was the thing to do. And almost every day it seemed there was some criticism of him in the papers. What a vile man this is, a rabble-rouser. He's no minister. He's no minister. And I remember one night he said, "Do you want to know what a good minister is?" Well, my ears picked up. Look at 1 Timothy 4. "Now the Spirit speaketh expressly, that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron, forbidding to marry and commanding to abstain from meats which God hath created to be received with thanksgiving of them which believe and know the truth. For every creature of God is good and nothing to be refused, if it be received with thanksgiving, for it is sanctified by the word of God and prayer." If thou, now Paul is writing to Timothy, and he's saying to Timothy, "If thou put the brethren in remembrance of these things, thou shalt be a good minister of Jesus Christ." And I can recall how Dr. Paisley, as was often his bent, he would begin to mock the image of the minister that was considered good, and how he would hold his cup of tea and his little finger nicely poking out and drink it ever so genteelly, and you'd say, "That's what people consider a good minister to be." But here is what God says a good minister is. "If thou put the brethren in remembrance of these things." What things? Verse 1. The things that the Spirit of God says. "Now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith." That's what a good minister will constantly proclaim and preach and emphasize, putting the brethren in remembrance of these things. Because if you look carefully there at verse 1, the apostasy that's taking place, the wickedness that is taking place, is found amongst professing Christians. Look at what it says. "Now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith." So there's a departure among those who profess the faith. A departure from those who profess the faith. And the good minister is ever pointing out, this is happening. Here's somebody departing. They're doing wrong. They've left the word of God behind. They've adopted new doctrines. A good minister had to preach like that. Well, I never forgot that. I took note of that. I was working in Ulster Television at the time, and I was in the film department. I used to be involved in the films that were put out on the television, and I worked with men, all of whom were Roman Catholic. Oh, what arguments. Because you see, I went out one Friday and came back on the Monday.
a red-hot Free Presbyterian Paisleyite. And he couldn't understand what had happened to me. And there was arguments every day. And I knew nothing of the Bible. When I got saved, I didn't know anything of the Bible. I really was in ignorance of the Bible. And I used to have to go home at night and study out the answers to all the questions I had heard and the arguments the day before, and then go in the next day and answer them. Answer them. And so when Dr. Paisley talked about a good minister, I put that up my sleeve. I stored that away. I knew that they were saying Ian Paisley's no minister. He's a bad minister. He's a wicked man. And here was the answer to that allegation. And it's the duty of God's people to continue witnessing against sin. Right up to the very return of Christ. That's what the church should be doing. Right up to then. You turn to Revelation and the chapter 18. You'll see what I'm saying is true. Chapter 18. And after these things, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great has fallen, is fallen. This is at the very end of this age. The fall of Babylon. Babylon as a city is in ruins today. But the chances are, young people, you live to see it built again. And when you live to see it built again, you remember Revelation 18, where you have the record of how God will destroy the city of Babylon, which will be built again. And here's the angel announcing this. It has become an abandoned place. It says, Babylon, the great has fallen, has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and the cage of every unclean and hateful bird. For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornications with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. Now, I don't expect you to follow closely the debate that's going on about Great Britain getting out of the European Union. I'm sure you're bored to tears now, even with the mention of it. Brexit. Well, you would be an absolute genius if you could follow what's happening. Because believe me, our government doesn't even know what it is they're supposed to be doing. But you do know it's all about money. It's all about, oh, if we get out of this union, will we be able to sell everything that we're making? Will we be able to buy everything we want to buy, oh dear? We might be poorer as a result. It's all about money. It's all about money. And in the European Union, you have the beginnings of the system of Babylon that's spoken of here. And all nations, it says, verse 3, have drunk of the wine of the wrath of fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornications with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. Now, when I come to Revelation, I have to really put a rope on myself, because I so want to speak about prophecy, but I'm not going to do that. The important thing is this. Notice verse 4. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues, for her sins have reached unto heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. The work of getting Christians out of ungodly associations is still going on. Right at the very end, because what we're looking at here is very close to the return of Christ. And still, Christians are being dragged out of unions and associations and groups and churches and denominations that they shouldn't be part of. That's why I say that that's what you and I should be engaged in. We should be engaged in witnessing for God and protesting against the errors that are present today. In the light of this truth, I can say that the chief characteristic of the witness of the Free Presbyterian Church should be one of protest against the apostasy of today. Maybe you will say, but surely, ought not preaching of the gospel be the chief feature should the preaching of the gospel not be the chief function, the chief characteristic of the church? Now, there are plenty of Christians who say that.
I used to hear men saying to Dr. Paisley time and time again, why don't you stop protesting and just preach the gospel?
I'll tell you my story. It's not that far away. Donald Cloney. I drove him to a Sunday afternoon meeting in the Orange Hall. This would have been about 1965, probably before the jail. Around about that time anyway. And as he was pushing in, the place was packed, he was pushing in, and going round the back, a man stopped and said, now Ian, leave the Pope alone. Just preach the gospel today. You see, God was teaching me things. I had a front row. I was at the cold face, as they say, and I was learning. And I heard this remark, you see. Big man never said a thing. Just went up onto the platform. The meeting began. He took over. And he said, I was sitting in the front row, listen. And he said, as I came into this meeting, a man said to me, and he quoted the man, and he said, you know, I came here to preach on John 3:16, but God has told me to preach on another subject. And he said down to me, reach me up that nose bag. That's what he called his old battered briefcase, where he had books and documents, and ecumenism and popery and everything else. And he started. And I sat there, and I learned. And I said to myself, you've got to be ever ready to preach the full counsel of God. The gospel, that is the evangelical message, you must be born again, is only part of the message God once preached. It's only part of the message. A man who has a flock of sheep, leading them out to the field and presenting them with good pasture, he's only done part of his duty toward those sheep. Now that he's got them in the pasture, he's got to look after them, guard them, protect them. And telling men they need to be saved is a vital part of the work of God. But you've got to watch over the flock of God and warn them against error and lies. And you've got to say, that man is not a servant of God. He's a liar. And here's why. And you've got to warn them. You've got to warn them. Surely, the thing is obvious. And that's what God brought the Free Presbyterian Church into existence for. I can give you a very clear illustration of what it is I'm saying. You turn to the last book of the Bible but one, the book of Jude. Look at Jude, the opening of Jude. And here the writer of this book explains why he's writing to them. This is a message that went out to all the church, went out to everybody. If you have in your Bible, look at what the book is called. It's called the General Epistle of Jude. Not the Epistle of Jude to the Galatians, or the Ephesians, or the Colossians. It's for everybody. And here's what he says. Verse 1, Jude the servant of Jesus Christ and brother of James, to them that are sanctified by God the Father and preserved in Jesus Christ and called, mercy unto you and peace and love be multiplied. Now, I have to say, he was speaking in love, speaking for the good of the church, seeking to advance the peace of the church. Beloved, when I gave all diligence to write unto you of the common salvation, when I dipped my pen in the inkwell and was getting ready to write, I was going to write to you just about the gospel, going to explain it, expound it. But God got me to change myself. Beloved, when I gave all diligence to write unto you of the common salvation, it was needful for me to write unto you and exhort you that you should earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered unto the saints, for there are certain men crept in unawares, etc., etc., etc. There have been boys dodged into the church, got into membership, got into the pulpits, and the deceivers, the sent of the devil. And I have to warn again. Preaching the gospel is not enough. I've got to warn against those who are preaching the gospel and who are seeking to poison the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. That's what the Free Presbyterian Church was raised up for. That's what it was raised up for. Now, the leader of your group here said that I could preach as long as I want. I understand your food here. Hope you're not for breakfast. because I might just be here a wee while, but we'll not really delay. I don't want to weary you. Because I want to tell you this. The message of God is not a wearisome message. It's not a wearisome message. I'm dealing here with why there was a protest. Because that's what the Free Presbyterian Church was called into existence for. It was witnessing against what was taking place in the country. It made us very unpopular. But that's what has to be done, no matter whether you're popular or not. That's enough, of course, for a number of pastors to back away from controversy. Oh, they don't want to be unpopular. They don't want to be thought ill of. They don't want people to look at them with suspicion. When my wife and I got married, one of the first places we lived was in the little village of Brookborough. And when she and I went to the one shop that was in Brookborough, if there was anybody on the pavement who saw us coming, they watched us. And as we approached them, they gradually turned their back to us. And they kept turning as we went past in order to keep their back to us. We went into the shop, and there might have been four or five people in the shop, and the owner of the shop was talking to them, observing them, spotting us. He would come up, "Yes!" And he would leave everybody else just to get rid of us, give us a few things, and get rid of us. That's what it was to be a Free Presbyterian back then. My wife was invited by the Girls' Collegiate School in Enniskillen to fill a post as a French teacher. Because they had discovered from Queen's University that she had not been placed in a teaching post. And the reason she wasn't placed in a teaching post was because whenever a school that interviewed her found out she was a Free Presbyterian, that was the end of the interview. Well, they discovered, they didn't know this, they just said, "Oh, here's this girl, Anne Beattie, she hasn't been appointed to a school, and we're keen, this is about September, the school had started. Let's invite her down." So they invited her down. And her qualifications were top class. And the headmistress said, "You have the job. Come see the flat, the apartment that goes with the job." My wife said, well, she wasn't my wife then. But she said, "No, I haven't really got time today. But you'll have time for a cup of coffee." Well, all right. And other teachers came in and they introduced her as the new teacher. And the lady, the headmistress, she was talking. She noticed she was wearing an engagement ring. "Oh, she's getting married. And who's the young man?" "Who?" "Oh." And the next question was, "You're not in the UVF, are you?" She was told to come back for the ratification, the key to her apartment, etc., etc., etc. A few days later, she came back and the headmistress was standing wringing her hands and saying, "I don't understand it, but the school committee has refused to appoint you." That's what it was to be a Free Presbyterian. People did not like protesters. People did not like those who pointed the finger and said, "That man's not telling the truth. That minister is violating his ordination oath. He's not teaching the Bible." And that's what God raised the Free Church to do. It was exercising that witness on the 6th of June 1966 that the Free Presbyterian organized a protest to the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. I'm not going to go into the details, but we started off from the end of the Ravenhill Road out onto the Albert Bridge Road, and the word came to us even before we started off that there's a riot in Cromwich Square. And we went out over the Albert Bridge Road, which rises up, and then you could look down, a good half mile away, to Cromwich Square, and the police and Republicans in that area were at it, ding dust. And when we came down, the police had driven them somewhat out of the main square, and as we went round it and up May Street, the stones came down. I remember so well looking up, and it was just like snow. A hail of stones. And to this day, I don't understand how not one Free Presbyterian was hit. Chief weapon that was used was a railway bolt, because they had dismantled part of a railway nearby, and they had actually gathered lorry loads of these big bolts, and they were coming flying down. I don't know how, well, it was the mercy of the Lord. The press the next day said that it was the Free Presbyterians who provoked the riot. But the riot was on before we left the church. Because in exercising that protest, we were stirring up the devil's crowd. And it didn't end with the Republicans in Cromick Square, because when we got to the Presbyterian building, they were so mad that we were there. And the governor of Northern Ireland, an office that no longer exists, but he was the Queen's representative, he was there. He and his poor wife, all these people shouting about popery and ecumenism and all the rest of it, they were aghast. Stormont the next day, there was a big debate, the Prime Minister was there, the Minister of Home Affairs, because we had our own government then, and they promised it would never happen again. And that's why we were taken up to court. That's why we were taken up to court. Because they hated the witness that was thus manifest in court, even though really they had no evidence. They said we had formed an unlawful assembly. In other words, we had formed a great crowd of people where we shouldn't have. But we pointed out we were marching round the General Assembly, right down to the City Hall, round again, and we had done that about 5 times, and when we came up the final time, the police had put a barricade across the road and they stopped us. We didn't stop, but we were forced to stop. But now, having been forced to stop by the police said, "Now you're an unlawful assembly," and we were brought to court. Well, they found us guilty, as it was pretty obvious they were going to. They fined us some £45 each or something. And then they said, "And we're also binding you over to keep the peace for 2 years. And in binding you over, you must promise not to conduct yourself in this fashion again." So basically we told the man, just said, "You know what you can do with your out of binding?" And he said, "Well, you'll go to jail for 3 months." "Okay." And so it was. And they honestly thought, put Paisley in jail for 3 months and that'll put manners on. That'll scare the life out of him. Jail does annoy people. The thought of going to jail, as one fella said to me in jail, "There's no hard men in jail." He says, "I hear them crying every night." And jail is a miserable sort of place. My dad had been a prison warder for many years during the war. So I got a first-hand education of what was going to happen when I went in jail. But I was young. I was 22. I couldn't have looked forward to a holiday with greater excitement. This was all an adventure. And it didn't put manners on Ian Paisley. And out there in the country, as a result of those 3 months, there was a stirring. A stirring. There was first of all a stirring in Belfast. And then, do you know what they did? The government said no more than 2 persons, 3 would be illegal, can meet together within 7 miles of the centre of Belfast. That was the law. Special Powers Act. Bidding any assembly, because there have been assemblies and marches and protests on the Shankill Road and everywhere and down round the Crumlin Road. Every night we could hear them singing hymns, and a great time was taking place. So the government issued that decree. You can't meet together, more than 2 of you, within 7 miles of the centre of Belfast. That was great, because it forced the whole issue out into the country. And very soon across the country, there were all sorts of gatherings, and men like Reverend John Douglas, Reverend Alan Cairns, S.B. Cook, they were being invited to speak at all these rallies. And the country was stirred. And when Ian Paisley got out, well, it was even greater. God used that protest, unplanned by us, unthought of by us, but God used it to begin to stir the country. And the result of that protest was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people saved. Hundreds of people saved. Young people, it has to be said, that the Free Presbyterian Church was never more effective than it was in those days. If I only could translate you back there to those days. I can remember we started a witness down in County Fermanagh as a result of the whole jail thing. I can remember young people coming. Some of them even came on tractors. They weren't old enough to drive a car. And even more so, they weren't able to buy a car, but they could get the tractor. And you used to see them coming on the tractors. Young people, thrilled to get out to hear the gospel. Do we have that today in the Free Presbyterian Church? Do we?
I don't think so.
The big meeting was the Sabbath evening. Sabbath evening services now, generally speaking, drop away to nothing. Christians are sitting at home, or down by the seaside, or watching television or something else. There's not the same enthusiasm, but not so then. It was all because of protest. A protest against what was wrong. God honored. God honored it. You stand up for the Lord, He will honor you. Well, I've taken too long. But of course it wasn't 9 o'clock before it started. But I hope something of what we said has proved to be a benefit to you. And a blessing. And that you will begin to think like those that we read about in Psalm 44. Remembering what their fathers had taught them. And praying that He might do the same again for them. The Lord bless you.